This is the podcast where the dark and creepy things we don't talk about discover a voice. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
You ever have one of those nights where you swear you're awake, but reality feels off? Like maybe the room shifts just enough to make you question your sanity, but not enough for anyone else to notice? Well, imagine that happening every night in a place that's supposed to be just another stop on your academic journey. A villa in France, charming on the surface, hiding something far more sinister behind its stone walls. Hey there, I'm Tony Bruschi, and welcome to this episode of Hidden Killers. Today we have a story that will leave you wondering if curiosity really is a dangerous thing. What happens when a skeptic, someone who prides themselves on reason and logic, gets dropped right into the middle of the unexplained? And what if it seems like whatever's there knows exactly how to rattle them? Tonight's story takes us to an old villa nestled in a quiet French village where strange footsteps echo through the hallways. Unseen forces grab at sleeping limbs, and no one but one man seems to notice. What makes this one different, though, isn't just the terrifying details of a house that seems to be alive with unseen energy. It's the unsettling sense that this thing, whatever it is, isn't just random. It feels personal. The way it moves, the way it waits just until you're about to sleep to make its presence known. It's almost as if the spirit enjoys playing cat and mouse with its guests. So here's my question for you. What happens when logic and reason can't explain what you've experienced? How do you reconcile a lifetime of skepticism when you suddenly find yourself holding your breath at every creak in the floorboards or clutching a Bible just to get through the night? And maybe the most unsettling thought of all, if it wanted to, could it follow you home? Let's dig in. It's going to get unsettling because it's always just when you think you're safe that the real terror sets in. And in this case, the nightmare didn't stop when our storyteller closed his eyes. What would you do if the very bed you lay in turned into a battlefield? All right, let's dive into it. Dear Tony, I've always prided myself on being a person of reason, science and facts guiding every part of my life. I believed in the supernatural the same way I believed in Loch Ness monsters or Bigfoot, fun to entertain, but firmly tucked in the unlikely category. That was until I spent 2 weeks in that villa. Now I'm not so sure. The villa was supposed to be a quiet place to sleep between lectures, a way station during my summer studies, nothing more. But it turned into something I still can't fully explain. I want to walk you through exactly what happened, step by step, because I need to make sense of it myself. Maybe you'll see something I missed, or maybe you'll just believe me, because honestly, most people don't. It started the first night almost innocently. I arrived exhausted from the long trip to the village. The villa was older, charming in that vintage French home way, with stone walls and wooden beams that creaked when you walked across the floors. My room was simple, two beds, one for me, and one left empty, alongside a small cabinet and a wooden wardrobe. It felt vacant, like no one had ever really lived there. The kind of place that should feel cozy but doesn't. I brushed it off as jet lag. I mean, come on, creepy vibes. It's an old house, not exactly groundbreaking stuff, right? The first night passed without much drama, except for one odd moment. I woke abruptly at around 3 a.m., heart racing as though I'd been running. The room felt stifling, even though the night air was cool. My bed seemed off, like it wasn't anchored to the floor. It gave me this disorienting sensation, like I was floating on waves. The logical part of me chalked it up to exhaustion. I traveled all day and I was overtired. I told myself it was nothing. The second night, though, things took a turn. It was small at first, just the little things that happen in old houses. The lights in my room wouldn't always turn on when I flicked the switch. They worked sometimes, but other times I'd stand there flipping it back and forth like a fool in the dark. Electrical fault, I thought. Houses like this are old. Wiring issues come with the territory. But it was more than that. I swear, Tony, every time the light refused to turn on, I'd feel something shift in the room. It was almost imperceptible, but the air would change, like someone holding their breath just behind me. Then the footsteps started. Late at night, when the rest of the house was silent, I'd hear them. Heavy, deliberate footsteps. Not the kind of noise you'd expect from one of my housemates sneaking in after a night out. These were too purposeful, too slow. Whoever or whatever was walking wanted to be heard. The steps echoed through the hallway outside my room, sometimes stopping just beyond my door. I'd lie there, frozen, counting each step, waiting for the moment it would push through the door, but it never did. At this point, I started sleeping with a small lamp on. I was determined to keep things rational. I told myself it was just one of my housemates being inconsiderate, maybe drunk, but that didn't make sense either. They all seemed confused when I asked them about it over breakfast the next morning. None of them had heard anything, and they weren't exactly the type to pull pranks. Then came the night when I woke up gasping for breath, my arm being pulled by some unseen force. It was as though something had gripped my upper left arm and was yanking me off the bed. My first thought was that I was having some kind of bizarre sleep paralysis, but I wasn't. I was wide awake, aware of everything around me. My mind sharp and panicked. I fought against it, clawing to stay in bed, every muscle in my body straining to pull my arm back. It lasted only a few seconds, just long enough for me to think, "Remember this moment? You'll convince yourself later it was a dream, but it's not. You are awake." And then it stopped. Just like that. No lingering presence, no shadows in the corner, nothing. Just me. Lying there in bed, wide-eyed and drenched in sweat, clutching my arm like a lifeline. The rest of that night, I didn't sleep a wink. I just lay there staring at the ceiling, too afraid to close my eyes. I wish I could tell you it ended there, but it didn't. I wish I could tell you that the night my arm was yanked from the bed was the climax, that things got easier, that I found peace. But that's not how it went. From that moment on, the villa seemed to know it had me. Whatever was lurking in that house, it was feeding off my fear, growing bolder with every passing night. And the worst part? It felt personal, like I was the only one it wanted to torment. The next few nights were marked by small but unsettling events. I became hyper-aware of every sound, every flicker of light, every subtle change in the room's temperature. The wardrobe in my room, which I hadn't touched since moving in, started to bother me. It was old, the kind you'd see in an antique shop, heavy wood with doors that creaked no matter how gently you opened them. But what really got to me was the cold. Every time I opened that wardrobe, a freezing gust of air hit me like I'd just opened the door to a walk-in freezer. I'd close it quickly, trying to convince myself it was just trapped air from an old house. But Tony, that cold felt wrong. It was the kind of chill that gnaws at your bones, like it's alive, trying to claw its way inside you. And then there was the night with the water. I had placed a glass of water on the bedside table before lying down. The room was unusually quiet, too quiet. I remember lying there drifting on the edge of sleep when I heard the unmistakable sound of the glass tipping over. Water spilled across the table, but somehow it missed my Bible, which was sitting right next to it. Not a drop touched the book. That's when the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. It was such a small thing, just a glass of water, but the way it happened, it felt deliberate. Like whatever was in that house was trying to send a message. Or maybe, just maybe, it was testing me. And then came the banging. It started just after midnight, a thunderous sound that shook the entire villa. It was so loud that, at first, I thought someone had fired a shotgun inside the house. My bed rattled, the windows shuddered in their frames, and the doors creaked violently with every bang. It came in bursts, one deafening blow followed by silence, and then another a few moments later. I sat up, heart hammering, waiting for something, anything, to make sense of the chaos. But nothing did. At one point, my bedroom door swung open on its own as if inviting me to step into the darkness. I hesitated for what felt like hours, but was probably only seconds. Finally, I mustered the courage to get up and check the house. With trembling hands, I flicked on the lights and tiptoed through the villa, my ears straining for any sound that might explain what I had heard. But there was nothing. The house was still. My housemates, who slept deeply, swore they hadn't heard a thing. I stood there dumbfounded, listening to their soft snores while trying to process how they could sleep through something that felt like the house was being ripped apart. At this point, Tony, I wasn't sleeping. Every noise, every creak, every shift in the air felt like a warning. I began sleeping with my Bible on my chest, as if it could somehow shield me from whatever was in that villa. But the more I clung to it, the worse things seemed to get. One of the last nights I spent in that house was the worst of all. I woke suddenly, the same way I had the night my arm was pulled, but this time there were footsteps. Slow, heavy steps, moving methodically through the hall, stopping just outside my door. I held my breath waiting, listening as the handle on my door jiggled ever so slightly. And then it opened. There was no one there, just darkness and silence, but I could feel it, Tony. Something was standing just beyond the threshold watching me. I could feel its presence pressing against me like a weight. And then the door slammed shut with such force that it rattled the windows. That was the breaking point. The next morning, I packed my things and left, lectures be damned. I didn't care if I missed half the summer program. I had to get out of that house. And when I finally got home, my parents picked me up from the airport. They knew something was wrong the moment they saw me. I told them I hadn't been sleeping well, that the villa felt off. And as I recounted the events of those 2 weeks, I could see the fear in their eyes. They believed me. For the first time, someone believed me. It wasn't until much later, after I'd returned home, that I found the account online, the one from the researcher who stayed in a house eerily similar to mine. He described almost the same things I experienced, the slamming doors, the heavy footsteps, the cold spots, and the overwhelming feeling of being watched. Tony, I don't know what it was that I encountered in that villa. I don't know if it was a spirit, a demon, or just the lingering energy of something dark, but I do know one thing. It targeted me. It wanted me to feel its presence, to know it was there. I still think about that house sometimes, about the wardrobe that felt like an icebox, about the way the lights flickered at just the right moments, about the water that seemed to deliberately avoid my Bible. I wonder if the house took issue with my presence, with my faith. Or maybe it just liked to play. The worst part, Tony, is that I can't shake the feeling that it followed me home. Since returning, I've noticed small things. Doors creaking open on their own, lights flickering when they shouldn't, and that same bone-chilling cold settling into my room at night. I don't know what to do. What do you think, Tony? Am I being paranoid, or did something from that villa attach itself to me? And if so, how do I get rid of it? All right, let's take a moment to break this one down. What exactly was going on in that villa? A skeptic would say, look, it's just poor wiring and the stress of a packed lecture schedule playing tricks on an exhausted mind. And that's a reasonable place to start. Sleep deprivation, a new environment, especially one as isolated and eerie as that villa, can absolutely cause the brain to misfire. You see shapes in the dark, hear noises that aren't really there, and your mind fills in the blanks with whatever it thinks makes the most sense, or in this case, the most terrifying sense. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's talk about the cold, the wardrobe that turned into an icebox for no good reason. Now, there are natural explanations, insulation issues, airflow problems. Maybe there was a draft sneaking through an old vent no one noticed, but that still doesn't explain the sense of malevolence, that feeling of being watched as if something intelligent was lurking just beyond sight. Cold spots are a classic marker of paranormal encounters, or so the theory goes, something about spirits drawing energy from the air to manifest. Maybe that's what was going on in that wardrobe. Or maybe the wardrobe was holding something far older. Far darker than anyone realized. And the water glass. There's another detail that sticks out. Sure, it could have been knocked over accidentally, but isn't it curious how it spilled just enough to startle our storyteller, yet somehow avoided the Bible entirely? As if whatever was at play wanted to show its power, while making it clear it wasn't done messing with them just yet. Then we get to the heart of it. Those footsteps in the hallway, the banging on the doors. This isn't just an old house making noises. What we're dealing with here feels intentional. And that's the unsettling part. Whatever this thing was, it wasn't just coexisting in the villa, it was interacting, it was targeting. If this was some kind of residual haunting, like a recording stuck on a loop, we'd expect the same noises at the same time over and over again. But that's not what happened here. These noises escalated. They had rhythm, direction, even intent. It was like the house was reacting specifically to its new visitor. Or perhaps rejecting them. Now, what really raises the stakes here is the narrator's faith. Bringing a Bible into a space that might be haunted is, let's say, complicated. There are plenty of stories, some credible, some not, about spirits reacting aggressively when confronted with religious objects or people of faith. Is it possible that whatever was in that house viewed the narrator not as just another tenant, but as a threat? Someone it needed to intimidate or scare away? But here's the twist I can't shake. It didn't seem satisfied with just haunting the villa. It followed them home. That's not the behavior of a mere housebound spirit. That's something more personal. We're talking attachment, a spirit or entity that latches onto someone, carrying their presence wherever they go. Why them? Why this person? Maybe the answer lies in the spirit's resentment of their faith, or maybe it's something deeper, something connected to the villa's history, or even to our storyteller's own past. And isn't that what makes these stories so chilling in the end? It's not just about what goes bump in the night. It's about what these encounters mean, how they challenge our understanding of the world and of ourselves. Was this entity trying to prove something, or was it simply toying with someone it knew couldn't fight back? One final thought. What if all of this, the cold, the noises, the arm being yanked, wasn't about fear at all? What if it was an invitation? A way of pulling our storyteller deeper into a world they never wanted to see, a world they can't quite escape now that they've glimpsed it? If this entity was trying to say something, what could it be? And perhaps more importantly, what happens now that it's been ignored? There's something unsettling about an experience that doesn't have a clean ending, isn't there? Some encounters leave you with closure, a message, a purpose. Others leave you wondering if the story is really over, or if the worst is yet to come. I'm Tony Broski, and these are the kinds of questions that stay with you long after the lights go out. So here's what I leave you with. What would you do if the haunting didn't end when you left the house? How do you fight something that knows where you sleep, what you fear, and follows you across continents? I guess, in the end, the only real question left is, what happens if it decides it's not done with you yet?
Want more ghost stories of the paranormal? Press subscribe now wherever you get podcasts. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day, all year long. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Broski.